is the MS Fitness Challenge Podcast, your source for the best, most inspiring, and up-to-date information concerning all things related to MS Fitness and health. This is Stephen Gloss, your host, an MS Warrior trainer and fitness advocate. The MS Fitness Challenge provides guidance and support to people with MS and fitness professionals worldwide in an effort to educate and train them in the benefits of exercise, nutrition, and mindset. Together, we can win the battle against multiple sclerosis. This is episode number 20. Today, we're going to mix things up and we'll actually have a former guest from episode 5 joining the show to do a role reversal swap and interview me. Please welcome the one and only amazing Maureen Manley. How you doing, Mo?
I'm doing great, Stephen. It's great to be here. I'm so excited about this role reversal thing.
Yeah, it's going to be a definitely unique experience for me to finally be on the hot seat. I like this.
That's right. And you will be on the hot seat.
So yeah, Maureen, how have you been doing with just lately with everything with COVID going on? I mean, it's been a crazy world.
Oh, how have I been going? You know, the important thing is for all of us is that we adapt to the challenges that we're facing, and that we keep moving forward with our dreams and finding ways to stay after what's important to ourselves.
I love that. That's absolutely awesome.
Well, Stephen, it is so fun to be able to turn the tables on you. What you've managed to achieve by doing a Ironman triathlon is just amazing. So I thought it'd be great to start with just having you share some of your MS journey. Like when were you diagnosed and what sort of symptoms were you having or continue to have? And what sort of approach do you take with your MS to optimize your health and well-being that would even allow you to think about taking on an Ironman triathlon?
Yeah. So this, I appreciate you asking that question. This whole journey, it really began back in, I would say, July of 2018. My family and I, we had recently just moved from Pennsylvania to California for this new, awesome, what I would thought would be, ended up being my like dream job, my dream career. I was working as a drone pilot and a salesman for an engineering firm in California because I had been a drone pilot in the military. So those skills and my education with a master's in business, it all kind of translated into this amazing role where I thought I'd finally, you know, quote unquote, made it. And I ended up taking a business trip to Japan. We were doing some flight demonstrations with the drone that I was selling. And while I was there, my left foot went completely numb to the point where like I could like literally stab my foot with a knife and not feel it. And at first I thought it was really funny and I'd even poke fun and like show people, you know, stab my foot with a fork and be like, I don't feel that. And those fun and games really kind of turned into outright panic after about day 5 of no reprieve. Sure. So yeah, heading back to the United States, within a matter of just 3 weeks, it went from that foot being numb to numbness all over my body to blurry and double vision to the point where I couldn't even walk because I had a hard time moving my legs, where even with a cane, sometimes I would stumble and fall. And it got even to the point where I was literally wetting the bed every night because I had just lost control of my bladder. I remember I was trying to drive somewhere and I just ended up wetting myself there in the driver's seat because there's nothing I could do. I mean, that's sort of what I was confronted with. And within just a very short time span, I found myself jobless, pretty much homeless, having to live with my in-laws again, with my family. My wife just had he's not 2 years old, but my son was born a week after I was diagnosed. And I was just, you know, at a loss as to where life was headed. Thankfully, I ended up coming across because, you know, I'm a really stubborn guy. The doctors told me that it'd be pretty likely that I'd be wheelchair bound within the like next year or two of my life. They saw my case being very aggressive, but I'm a really stubborn guy.
And yes, you are.
And so I decided, you know, I'm going to dig into every resource imaginable to find out the best way to handle this disease. And I came across this book called David's Goliath. And obviously anybody listening to this podcast probably knows that it's written by the founder of the MS Fitness Challenge, David Lyons. And I was just so inspired and just given so much hope by that book, by just getting to just read David's experience about how he used fitness and particularly bodybuilding to overcome this disease. And at the very end, there's this little contact us section. And I decided, you know, I've got to reach out to David, just let him know how much this book means to me. not really aware that this book had been written years ago and that the email information that was attached to the book probably wasn't valid anyways. But nevertheless, I wrote an email, sent him my thanks and just, you know, how much that book meant to me. And it just so happened, probably fate has it, that David was actually checking that email for the first time in like a year and wow. saw my email come through. And he messaged me back within 5 minutes and the rest is pretty much history. The next day we got on a phone call. I started working together with David and he kind of turned into like a mentor and like a almost like a second father figure for me, mm-hmm. teaching me and just coaching me through all the difficulties and sort of the setbacks that I would experience. I consider myself so blessed and fortunate to have met David. It really was incredible.
Yeah. And for many people feel the same way about him. And I just want to acknowledge, great for you for reaching out to him and saying, you know, I'm stubborn and I found somebody else who's stubborn too.
That's right. So
now I have a mentor.
Yeah.
That's awesome. So what other things along your journey before you decided to take on an Ironman, what sort of treatment approaches and dietary things did you start to adapt into your life and your training?
Yeah. So I remember like the week that I was diagnosed, my case of MS was so aggressive that they wanted to get me on like a form of chemotherapy that's called rituximab, mm-hmm. do an infusion. And my wife and my two kids, my son was only a couple days old, had already left to go to the East Coast. And I was left behind in California just so that I could get my infusion done. And I remember sitting in like the cancer ward of the hospital, just feeling so dejected, almost like hopeless. Just, mm-hmm. I felt like that, like I just knew inside that there had to be a better way, because that medicine, I mean, I broke out with just a horrible skin reaction. I felt horrible. I ended up getting sick for like 3 weeks after I took that infusion. And the medication just made me felt miserable. And I know that's not the case for everybody taking medication, but at least for me, I knew that the MS meds were not what I wanted to do. So thankfully David, you know, if you've talked to David, he's definitely not a big fan of like the medications for MS. You know, they're good for some people, but it just, oftentimes there's just some nasty symptoms you have to deal with from those medications. So he kind of pointed me in the right direction to meet some awesome people like Matthew Embry. And he's kind of the first person to really challenge me with the Hope MS diet, which is it's a gluten-free, dairy-free, whole foods diet that there's resources available on the Hope MS webpage, but just slowly taking it just incrementally. I didn't make this like dramatic change to my diet just overnight, because to be honest, that's difficult to cut out all those things that your body's used to that you've been eating regularly for your entire life, to just cut that cold turkey overnight. That's not very realistic. Maybe some people can do that like Matthew Embry, but for me, that has been a gradual transformational process. But over time, the better that I got with my diet, with following that non-inflammatory lifestyle, the more I started to notice the results, the more energy that I started to feel, the less symptoms, the less numbness I would feel in my legs. And so as I started to gain that momentum, it became easier and easier for me to rely less on like the MS medications and rely more on just doing those natural remedies. So it's been about actually a year now, Maureen, that I've actually been completely off of rituximab. And the only thing that I take right now is something that's called low dose naltrexone. As a resource, but it's like a drug that they give to people that usually have like a cocaine addiction, and it's the neurological cravings of the body to sort of curb that addiction. And so the logic being that if our immune system, our white blood cells are addicted to sort of eating that myelin, if we can curb that appetite and that desire through the low dose naltrexone medication, we can sort of diminish that craving and hopefully prolong the development of, or even completely halt it, hopefully, the development of MS. So I'd like to say that, you know, I have faith in it and that it's been working. And that isn't to say that I'm living like an MS-free lifestyle. Like right now, for example, I'm sitting here, and when I sit and I'm dormant for a while, my legs, you know, they're both numb. My feet are completely falling asleep. And so I just have to constantly keep moving. Otherwise, you know, MS is there to remind me, hey, you have MS. I wake up every morning just feeling like I've been hit by a train because I'm so exhausted and fatigued. But if there's one thing I've learned about MS is that regardless of whether or not I want to, the only thing I can do to be successful is just keep moving.
Right.
It's really hard sometimes. That's really hard.
Yeah. And in order to keep moving, you have to keep facing the challenges that MS presents. And it's not, I think when somebody looks at yourself or maybe myself as an athlete 30 years into this diagnosis, they're like, well, it must be easy for you. You must have a mild right. case of MS. And that's an assumption that's not necessarily correct.
Yeah.
And so thank you for sharing about the obstacles you faced and even overcome and that you continue to deal with. And it's not about having all the challenges we face be gone in order to live the lives that we want for ourselves. It's like meet the challenges, work with the challenges, and live the life that we want for ourselves. And I think that's so important and why it's so important that you're sharing your story, because you certainly are an individual that is meeting the obstacles that present themselves to you and being a radical service to people, just like David was to you. You're really taking that on yourself too, and helping other people understand what you can do. And really, we need to be the verbs of our own lives. It's like hope isn't just a thing, you know, it's a verb. And you're doing that. And I really admire this. So with everything that you just shared and all, you know, the challenges you face and the choices that you made, I mean, you know, when we have, when we're faced with tough stuff, we're faced with tough choices. And, but it doesn't mean we don't have any choices, and you've, chosen your path and you'll continue to adapt as you need to. And it's overwhelming what you face. There's no one that's listening to your story that says, whoa, like, holy smokes. It's great that he's, you know, feeling good. But with that, as you're adapting to this new diagnosis and how to work with it, you decided to take on an Ironman. So what the heck made you want to pursue an Ironman?
Yeah, so it is a pretty crazy story, but it was actually before I moved to California, I started, you know, becoming fascinated, just sort of having this, you know, sort of this fascination, really, that's the best word to use, of doing an Ironman for some reason. Just I think I fell across like an NBC special that was covering like one of the Ironman, the Kona Championship Series. Mm-hmm. I was just so amazed by some of the inspirational stories. And this was even before I was diagnosed with MS, just some of the crazy adversities that people had overcome to do this crazy Ironman feat. And I had just finished my getting certified as an NFPT, National Federation of Personal Trainer certification, to become an MS fitness training specialist. And I passed my test, and my wife and I were sitting in the parking lot. And for whatever reason, I looked at her and I said, I think I want to do an Ironman. And she looked at me and she's like, I'm going to tell David. And I was like, no, don't tell David. Don't tell him. Because if you tell David, that means I'm going to have to do it. Like if somebody else hears about it, that means I'm going to have to commit. So she, of course, she goes on to tell David, and David's like, yeah, absolutely, let's do it. I mean, without even flinching, he doesn't say, you know, no, you'll hurt yourself, or no, that's too dangerous. Like, he says, let's do it. So I wanted to start, like, do it the smart way and start, you know, the first year, I'm just going to do a half Ironman, see if I can, maybe that's something my body could handle. Cause mind you, I didn't even know how to swim at this point in time. I could swim maybe like one length of the pool without drowning, but that was just about it. And so I was like, I'm just going to do a half Ironman. So I planned on signing up for the June 2020 Maryland half Ironman. And this was right around like October. But it just so happened that I ended up having an appointment with at the local VA hospital to see a chiropractor. And this is the first time I was meeting this doctor. And I was having a really bad MS day that day. I was walking with my cane. I was having blurry vision going in and out. And I remember he called me into his office. He just sort of looks me up and down real quick. Doesn't, you know, real nonchalant about it. And he looks over my chart. He spins his chair around. He just stares at me for like 3 seconds. And he's like, I want to help you. And aww. I said, okay. And he's like, I have an idea, but I'm kind of afraid to say it. I'm not sure if I should. And you know, I told him, there's nothing you can say that's going to scare me or that's going to surprise me. And so he pauses again and waits about like 5 or 10 seconds. And he finally says, have you ever heard of an Ironman? And I kind of just had all these like goosebumps flood my body. And so I come to find out this doctor's actually done 3 Ironmans himself. And that's when I told him about my ambitions to do the half Ironman in June that I was just about to start my training. Mm-hmm. And he looks kind of like a face of confusion. And he said, a half Ironman? I said, yeah. He said, just a half? He said, what's stopping you from going all the way and doing a full Ironman? You realize you not only have the chance to tell a good story, but a great one. You have the chance to go from good to great. And that's all I needed, Maureen. I mean, that was it. I went home and I hadn't, you know, I hadn't even paid for the half Ironman yet. It took me less than, I'd say, like 5 minutes from the time I opened my door when I got home. I told my wife and I said, I almost felt like it was a sign from God. I was like,
oh, sure.
I've got to do this. You know, I'm going to do a full Ironman. So that night I went onto the, you know, computer, paid an exorbitant fee because Ironmans are not cheap.
They are not.
To do a full Ironman. And that really started my Ironman training journey.
Wow. Wow. So, you know, I love stories like that because it just shows how, whatever your terminology is, you know, they're angel kisses or, you know, the universe is speaking to you. And there's just this zone where you just know you're in the right flow and God, spirit, the universe is supporting you in it. It doesn't mean it's going to be easy,
right?
But you're being supported. And it's a sign of being supported with a you know, radical dream. This is so awesome.
Yeah.
So now you're all registered for an Ironman. And so tell us how did you approach your training? This is new territory for you. So how did you start with this training and, you know, not drowning and all that?
Yeah, I already told you I barely knew how to swim, but this is the thing, Maureen, like I'm just, none of this would have been possible without, there's so many people I have to give credit to. The first one, his name is Matt Gable. And my wife and I, she's actually a group fitness instructor. She teaches Les Mills Body Pump. So she puts me through the ringer on a weekly basis and puts my body through probably torture I shouldn't be doing upon myself. But I do these weekly classes. And there was this older gentleman, he's probably in his 60s, that was in this class. And, you know, I started developing a relationship with him and he started, you know, we started getting closer and I ended up telling him this, you know, I think the week that I'd signed up for the Ironman that, you know, I'd made the commitment and I, you know, I looked at him and I was like, but I don't really know how to swim. I sort of laughed about it. And he looked at me, he kind of shrugged. He's like, well, I know how to swim. And over time he shared with me that, you know, he was being very modest and humble when he said that he knew how to swim. Cause this man was actually, you'd never know by, you know, just looking at him from the outside and just his demeanor. Cause he's like the sweetest, like teddy bear figure you'll ever meet. But this guy was a former US Navy SEAL.
Oh, wow.
And so he doesn't just know how to swim. He knows to do a lot more than that. So
right.
He said, you know, I'll teach you. So once a week we'll hop in the pool and I'll give you a couple lessons. And so just week by week, I think it took about 4 weeks. I did about like 8 lessons with him, but I learned how to swim. And I remember one session in particular where it was, you know, I was about like 4 weeks into this and I could still barely make it down to one side of the pool and back without feeling like I was hyperventilating. I was going to drown. And I would just like, I remember like punching the water, getting so frustrated and every part of me just wanted to quit, that it just, this was impossible. This just wasn't worth it. So I ended up just spending that swimming session just kind of meditating and just sitting there at the pool, just trying to visualize what it would look like to actually be able to swim 2.5 miles. And thankfully, Matt was instrumental in sort of pushing me and motivating me and not letting me give up. And just one day, I can't really describe how, but it finally clicked. I went from, I swam 6 laps, 8 laps, 10 laps. And all of a sudden I realized I can just keep going. There's not really a limit to this. And so the swimming just, it sort of all came naturally. And tie into that, I ended up getting because I started my training in the winter, I ended up getting a stationary bike trainer, there's an awesome local bike store that the bike owner ended up giving me a really great discount, and just started using an app called Zwift, where I was able to basically in my basement traverse a virtual world on my bike and right. Spend countless hours just in my basement riding the roads of Zwiftopia is what they call it. But it just, it it's really with doing virtual training like that, it really all boils down. It's just, it's you versus you. It's, mm-hmm. it's about motivating yourself each and every session. Like I would end up about once or twice a month. I think it was once a month. I would do like a virtual half Ironman and yeah. just waking up knowing that day, I didn't do the swim portion. I would just add a little bit to the run, but waking up knowing that day that, all right, Steven, we're going to wake up at like 4 a.m. You're going to get outside, start running, and you're not going to be done exercising until probably about like 2 p.m. Like, this is your day, get ready. And it's just, and also knowing what sort of consequence that's going to end up being on my body about how painful and how difficult it's going to be to recover from that. Because training for an Ironman with MS, I mean, it is just such a slog fest. It is such a, like, when I looked at all the different suggested like training modules that like the professional athletes follow, or just the average Joes go from couch to Ironman. And it's just, for somebody with MS, it just doesn't work. I can't day by day do those grueling workouts and expect to maintain any semblance of functionality. It's impossible. So I really had to be very, it was, I think, one of the hardest lessons I had to learn through this entire training was I had to listen to my body. That came up over and over and over again. And it's something that David kept telling me over and over again, because that was his big concern.
Right.
In the beginning, I refused to listen. And more times than not, I paid the price for that.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, I know that. And I think what allows people with MS to be successful in their training is really finding their way and not listening. If you don't listen to your body, you're going to get yourself into a lot of trouble. And I can imagine the stubbornness of yours and wanting to do it a certain way and realizing that in order to be successful, you're going to have to listen to your body and adapt to whatever you need to do in order to get this thing done.
Yeah.
And that's just amazing, because that's part of it. Because if you had in your mind that it has to be this way in order to, you wouldn't have been successful.
Yeah.
And we all need to keep that in mind, all of us living with MS. So what, in all this training, you're doing such a great job at adapting and adjusting, listening to your body, as hard as that is and was. Yeah. What did you find the hardest with the training?
Oh man, that's such a great question, because there are so many difficult elements to it. But I would say, because during my training, from the time I started in October, because I'd been pretty fit my entire life thanks to the military. So mm-hmm. I had a pretty good baseline to start with. Of course, I'm dealing with MS, but my overall cardiovascular health is pretty good. So, but I would say the most difficult experience of that journey was, I would say in January, I got really sick. And then in March, I ended up having like an MS exacerbation where I basically had like a miniature flare up, to where I couldn't walk again. And this is, mind you, after I've spent probably like 5 months of really dedicated, committed, grueling training, 5 months into this. And I find myself not able to see, like my vision got worse than it ever had been before. Like I couldn't recognize you if you were standing right in front of me. Your face would just be a blur.
Right.
I couldn't see. I could barely walk again. I had to be pushed around in a wheelchair. And I was just like, I almost felt like I was losing control of everything. Like there was mm-hmm. a part of me that was like, was this really all worth it? Did I just work myself out into like an irredeemable relapse? Like, was this all for naught? So I spent, I'd say, about 3 days in the hospital. And thankfully, the steroid treatment that they finally, it took a while to finally, for whatever reason, I had to argue, beg and plead for an intravenous steroid treatment. Because the doctors did MRIs, they couldn't actually see any new MS activity. So they really didn't know what to do. So finally they caved in, and it was almost like a miracle. Within like 30 seconds of that IV put into my arm, my vision came back and I could walk again. It was,
wow.
It was pretty amazing.
Yeah. Obviously there was some inflammation.
Yeah.
And you're like, come on guys, let's just get this inflammation down.
Right.
Wow. So 5 months into grueling training, you find yourself in a wheelchair, not being able to see.
Yeah.
And so you go to the hospital and then you get the steroids and you start to feel better. And
Yeah.
what'd you do after that?
So it took a lot of prayer, a lot of talking, especially with my wife, Nikki, who I just owe so much to this journey, just for being so patient with me and just for just giving me the opportunity to take, I would say, take the risk of just continuing my training. Cause there was a lot of fear involved with, you
sure.
know, what's going to happen if I keep doing this? Like, can my body really handle this?
Mm-hmm.
And so she was graceful enough to sort of, you know, give me the thumbs up and support me, and also deal with all the crazy. I mean, doing an Ironman, it's very expensive, not just the race registration, but all the equipment and especially all the food. Like, I was just like I was probably at one point eating up to like 8 to 10,000 calories a day. I mean,
trying to keep weight on. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an insane endeavor. And just being it, that was another very difficult part of the training too, is trying to find things that I could eat in bulk that wasn't going to send my stomach into like an inflammatory bomb.
Mm-hmm.
So it was, there was a lot of difficult parts, but I would, to answer that question, the hardest part was dealing with that really significant setback and having the hope and the courage to keep pressing on.
Right. Yeah. And continuing to find a way.
Yeah.
Like, did you feel that maybe what you're doing, you're pushing too hard? Did you adjust your training after that, this episode of MS?
Well, at that point, I think I just completed my first virtual half Ironman, and
okay.
I knew that I was making really good progress. Like, mm-hmm. I was on the way. Like, if I kept doing what I was doing, I had the confidence that I could do it. And I'm a very idealistic sort of like envisionary person, and I like to just visualize like my future ideal self. And I couldn't look at that future self in the mirror and envision a future in which I decided to quit. That just, it wasn't congruent with like who I am. Like,
right.
If I'm going to go down, I want to go down swinging. And you know, with MS and life in general, we're not promised tomorrow, but with MS, like, we're all just like an hour away from a life altering relapse. And so I just sort of went ahead, proceeded with the mindset that, you know, if MS is going to take me down, it's going to have to fight.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And it's, yeah, you don't want to mess with you and your mindset. That's for sure. Cause I mean, I hear that you're willing to dance, you know, with it and, but not give up. And that's awesome. You're going to continue to find your way. So here you're registered for this Ironman,
mm-hmm.
and you're training, you're overcoming physical, mental, emotional, spiritual challenges, you're meeting them, you're learning, you're adapting, you're adjusting, you're getting stronger and stronger. And this virus called COVID-19 is, you know, has shown up, and it's also not going away.
Yeah.
And this event that you're scheduled to do is starting to look a little different. So can you tell us a little bit about how you met the challenges of this COVID thing and said, you know, gosh darn it, I'm going to do this Ironman.
Right.
So what did that look like?
Yeah. So that was that, man, you know, it goes back to the previous question. What was the hardest part? That was extremely difficult. Because I had spent all this time, all this hard dedication effort, spent all this money, had eaten all this crazy amounts of food. And we get to March, COVID happens, COVID strikes. And at first, I didn't really think anything much of it. I'm just like, oh, this will go away pretty soon. But like you said, and we all know, still here, hasn't gone away. Don't know if it ever will at this point. And I remember just looking around and seeing that like all these different events are getting canceled, concerts, and soon that I find out that like the first Ironman race gets canceled. Then all of a sudden the reality sets in. What about my race? Like COVID happened in March and my race is in September. So I was like, surely COVID's going to be done by then. Like, I've got nothing to worry about. So June rolls around, July rolls around. I'm in the thick of like the most probably grueling part of my training, where I think in July I ended up running a total of 250 miles and biking about 800 miles. Like, it was an insane month of training for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's about the first week of August, and I get that email notification.
Wow.
And it says, you know, your race has been canceled. Don't worry though, we'll be back up and running in 2021. Thanks for all your hard work, blah, 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 blah. But when you have MS, you know, everybody telling you, oh, it's fine, you have next year. That's really hard to digest, because honestly, I didn't know if I could keep pushing my body like that. And sure, if I would be able to do it again the next year. So thankfully, throughout this whole time, the Ironman Group Foundation during COVID, they came up with what's called the Ironman Virtual Platform, Ironman VR. Mm-hmm. And that's where they would host these virtual races that I would be doing to help with my training. And about, I'd say it was like the, right, about a week after my actual Ironman race was supposed to kick off, they announced that they would be hosting the first ever full distance virtual Ironman race. Wow. And I was just, you know, at this, you know, honestly, because I'd been so dejected about my race being canceled, I had actually stopped training for about 3 weeks. Like I pretty much did nothing. I just felt so defeated. Mm-hmm. And when this opportunity came up, at first I was a little bit hesitant, because although I'd been doing lots of training in the pool and I could swim like 2 miles in the pool, no problem, I had never actually gone into the open water to do some swimming. And I was only about 2 weeks away from when this virtual event was supposed to be. Wow. So thankfully, I came across this swim coach, and her name's Louise Hyder-Darlington. And okay, I connected with her to see if she had time in her schedule to just give me like even just like two coaching sessions to swim in open water. And she took me up on it. And that sort of was the initiating seed for me to just like go all in. I'm going to commit. I'm not sure how this is going to work to do an Ironman on my own without the support of a race staff. But on October, like I set a date for myself, October 10th, come rains, shine, snow, whatever's going to happen, I'm going to try and become an Ironman.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of try with you. you're going to do to the best of your ability. So you set this date. This is amazing. You're going to be just unstoppable. So you set this date for yourself. And it's interesting because so much, as I listened to you, so much of your training was done virtually.
Yeah.
And you hadn't done an Ironman in a big organized fashion before. So in some ways, that's what you want. Of course it is.
Right.
But you didn't have that to pull from, because when I think about it as a endurance athlete myself, and have a long history of big endurance events, and just, I feed off of the energy of race day. And I know what to lean into, you know, like how this energy is going to kind of lift me, but you're kind of used to doing virtual stuff. And still, you've got October 10 that you're going to make this thing happen, or you're going to do it and see how it goes. So you've got this event on October 10th. I'm sure you wrapped your heart, mind, and everything around, okay, this is the day I'm going to make this happen. So how did you stay motivated without this big event energy of, you know, announcers, other competitors, you know, music playing and other supports people there? How did you stay motivated through for the event? And I want to talk more about the event itself, how it's great. But how, right, just talk to us about how you stayed motivated.
Yeah. So I'd always, you know, one of the biggest dreams that any Ironman person who's like pursuing an Ironman is to hear that announcer at the very end, you know, make that epic decree of, you know, your name, you are an Ironman.
Yes.
Like you just dream of hearing those words. And obviously there wasn't going to be any of that fanfare. Like I remember that night, the night before, I'd spent like probably a good 6 hours preparing all of the energy gels, all of my hydration, nutrition, all of my gear, getting it preset, like doing all the things you would do before, like probably a real Ironman event anyways. Mm-hmm. But I could barely sleep that night, and all I could just kept thinking about was, you know, missing my alarm, because that was huge, because that was the goal was for me was to wake up at 3:30. The drive to where I would be actually starting my swim was about an hour and 10 minutes away. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to make sure I got there in ample time to start the to start the race at around 5:30 was our kickoff time. So I felt like I needed to wake up at 3:30, and I don't think I fell asleep till about midnight. And then I was up probably every hour. Just there was so much adrenaline and just anxiety building up inside of me. So even though maybe I only got like a total of 2.5 hours of sleep, I woke up really excited. I mean, the day was finally here. Like no matter what was going to happen, like I was blessed to finally have the opportunity. That's all I wanted, was the opportunity to put all that hard work to the test and just give myself a chance. So, yeah.
Awesome. And you created the opportunity for yourself. I just love that because there could have been a, COVID, blame, but you made it happen. And that's just so inspiring to me. It's like, you know what, this isn't optimal, but this is what I'm going to do to make this happen. And you were equally as amped up and motivated and nervous, and because this was your race and this is race day.
Yeah.
So here we are, race day. I assume you did wake up to your alarm.
Yes. Yep.
And got to the start in time. So tell us, what was going through your mind as you got ready to take off for the swim?
Yeah. Well,
the first leg.
I got there, and it's probably around, like, I'd say 52 degrees. It's pretty, I mean, it's not warm whatsoever. Mm-mm. So my body doesn't do well when my limbs get cold. The numbness and all the pain is sort of amplified.
Sure.
And I just remember getting my wetsuit on. There was only my wife, my dad, a close friend, and my swim coach were there. My swim coach, she actually elected to sort of spot me via kayak. She followed me on the entire swim just as a safety precaution, because swimming in like a river in the dark is by yourself is not a great idea.
It's not.
So she was there, but the way that we set it up, she actually set up a buoy about halfway out into the river that I would swim to, and she met me there, and we actually when I gave her the thumbs up, that's when we started my clock. So it wasn't like when an Ironman race, you just run into the river and get going. And one of the reasons for that is because the water temperature was really cold. I mean, this is October in Pennsylvania, so the water temperature is probably like very low 60s. So it took me just a little bit of time to get adjusted to that water temperature. So I remember the moment was there. I mean, it was like about 5:31. I got into the water. It was like ice to my lungs. But after about 3 or 4 minutes of just like, moving my body, kicking my feet, I was like, everything else was, you could have been talking to me and I wouldn't have heard a word you were saying. Like, I was in the zone. I was just, I was ready to just go out and conquer the day, was my mindset. So I remember just giving that thumbs up, and that was it. I mean, that was the start of what would be just an incredible, unforgettable day.
Wow. In the zone is right. You didn't need other competitors with you. You had it down.
Yeah.
Oh, this is awesome. So there's, we all know Ironman is consisted of a swim and a bike and a run. And so in the totality of the race, and you can break it down in whatever way you would like to share with us any point in this race that you felt like it was too much or that you felt like quitting.
Yeah. Well, the swim went great. I mean, the swim was awesome. Like, I set like my own PR for like a 2.5 mile swim. I actually went a little bit further than 2.4 miles. So, but I got out of the water, and it's, like I said, it's only about 50 degrees and I've just been in 60 degree water temperature. So we had some troubles getting my wetsuit off. And so I just spent probably an additional 7 minutes just outside, my body almost naked with being outside on like high 40s, low 50 degree temperatures, soaking wet. And so my body just started like really locking up, getting cold. So I had to, they eventually got me into my wife's car where the heat was on, but I had to spend like a good, I'd say 15 to 20 minutes in that car trying to warm up. And I was just in so much pain in my feet because they were so numb.
Sure.
And it's just so frozen that I was just getting so frustrated that I felt like I was wasting so much time, and it just wasn't putting me in a good mental state. So I just had to, thankfully my swim coach, she was really good at just sort of calming me down and just reminding me that the time you're spending now is going to help you for the rest of the day. Like, right. Take your time, warm back up, like, do what you need to do to be, to set yourself up for success. So, I ended up getting on the bike, and the funny thing is the route that I took, I went from a place called Blue Marsh Lake in Reading, Pennsylvania, to Marietta, Pennsylvania. It's about a 55-mile bike ride. And all of my training that I've been doing had been relatively flat.
Okay.
Because the Maryland Ironman course is like one of renowned as being one of the most flat courses that you could possibly do. And the reason that's beneficial for me is with my legs, like, it's, I can maintain the endurance and the blood flow through them if I'm not having to constantly change the intensities. And the route that I took from Reading to Marietta was anything but flat.
It's, oh, no.
If you've been in central Pennsylvania before, there is no flat land.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Some of those,
I follow you on Strava, Stephen. I'm like, how does he find these flat places to ride? And the actual Ironman, you're, oh boy, you're having to do hills.
So that really, I mean, the first 55 miles, like, I remember there was this one hill and I almost literally had to stop and like walk my bike up. Thankfully I didn't, but I had to give like every ounce of like effort and sweat and energy that I had in my body to make it up that hill. And this was only like 20 miles in, and I'm just like, I still have like 90 miles to go.
Yeah.
Like, how am I going to do this? So, but honestly, Mo, like, what really motivated me, and I just want to thank everybody listening, is like thinking about you guys, just thinking about people with MS, thinking about the MS Fitness Challenge, just thinking about what it would mean to people if I just fought through it and just pushed a little harder and found a way to fight through the pain. Because I knew that there were so many people, I don't know if counting on me was the right word, but there were so many people that believed in me.
Right.
And just wanting to like, to just prove them right, not prove people wrong, but just prove those people right, that they had ample reason to furnish that belief.
Oh, I so love that, Stephen. Prove them right. Because I can't tell you in all the years that I've been working with the MS community, how much people motivate by proving people wrong. And not that that's a wrong way to motivate yourself, but what a beautiful energy to be in, to prove people right that believe in you. Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much. And how hard that is to actually do.
Yeah. So, right.
Oh, that's amazing. So I'm not hearing anything that made you, you went through hard stuff for sure. Mm-hmm. And I imagine, you know, I'm a cyclist, not a triathlete. I've done little triathlons, not Ironmans, but I'm imagining you didn't have the proper gearing on your bike for hills. No. Not only were you not training for this sort of thing, but maybe the gears weren't there. So you're facing obstacles that you didn't really see coming, and you're adapting to them. And as painful as adapting can look like sometimes.
And I have to give tremendous credit to my dad. He actually ended up being like my mobile hydration and sustenance station. Like, on my bike ride, he would drive 10 miles ahead of me and wait outside of his car holding like a little energy gel or like a Gatorade. And he was just so like on the run. He ended up following me the entire way on his own bicycle, like basically riding his own bike for 26.2 miles with like a backpack. But yeah, like for the entire bike ride, I was wearing, because hydration, I didn't have like a staffed race. Mm-hmm. I was wearing a Camelback that probably weighed an additional 5 pounds. So just all those small little things that I had to sort of adapt and sort of be creative with, it made it actually more challenging to finish.
Sure. Right. But you found a way.
Yeah.
Didn't mean it was any. Yeah. Now you got a Camelback on your back, weighed more, and you're going up hills you weren't trained for. But not that you couldn't handle them. That's for sure. So you finished the bike, you started the run. How'd the run go?
So I remember getting off my bike and my legs just felt like they were full of cement. Thankfully there's this, this product that I use called Amp Human PR Lotion. Mm-hmm. Not sure if you've heard of it before, but
I've heard of it. I use it too. It's awesome.
Yeah. I used it in like almost 3/4 of an entire bottle after I got off of my bike. And I just lathered my legs like they were all just like a sticky, like just slimy, gross mess covered in like bugs and flies from the bike ride.
Perfect.
I just drenched my legs in that stuff. And I after I got off my bike, I probably sat down to like eat for 5 minutes, just inhale as much food as possible and drink probably like 3 Gatorades. And I took off, and somehow, some way, like I was actually able to start out at a pretty decent pace of like 9 minute miles.
Mm-hmm.
But mile by mile, of course, that all started to slow down. And at about like the halfway point, about 13.1 miles, I stopped again, ended up eating, and probably took about a 25 minute break, just eating as much, because I was just so hungry the entire race. And I knew from that, I wanted that to be my last like legitimate stop. Like I looked at my dad and I said, this is it. Like, if you need to eat something, you need to eat, use the bathroom, like whatever you need to do. Like from this moment on, we're not stopping. Like, this is it. And there was just so much joy in getting to say those words of knowing, you know, cause I think I had about like 4.5 to 5 hours left to run 13 miles. Like I knew I could do that. Uh-huh. And so it was slowly coming together. And of course, you know, it's getting, after we hit about 6 p.m., it's starting to get dark. So I ended up running with like a flashlight on my head. My dad and I are on this trail that's supposed to be closed after sunset. So it's in the middle of the woods. It's pitch black dark. There's no lights. And I was just me and my dad out there just trying to finish this race. So we get to about, I've got about like 2.5 miles left. And my mm-hmm. pace has slowed down to like 10-30 minute miles. And I'm just in so much pain. And I'm actually, at that point in time, I was actually fighting the worst MS fatigue that I'd ever had before. Like I almost wanted to literally fall asleep while I was running. Like I felt like I could do it.
Yeah, I bet.
But all of a sudden I was jolted awake by my left leg, felt like it caught on fire all of a sudden, was being electrocuted.
Wow.
And I had to literally like stop in place and like hold my leg as it was like going through like a, I don't know, it was like almost felt like a Charlie horse going through my entire leg. And I looked at my dad and I was like, I'm gonna have to walk. Like I literally, anytime I put pressure on that leg, it felt like the whole thing wanted to cramp up. So for like the last 2 miles, I ended up having to walk. And thankfully, my one friend who was there at the starting line and my wife, they came out to meet me. And my dad there being there too, they all helped me towards like the end of the finish line. And it was funny because those last 2 miles, I was in so much pain and so wow. exhausted that I remember looking at my wife and I said, I'm never, ever, 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 ever doing this again. Like this is miserable. Like, I don't know why anyone would want to ever do this more than once.
Right. And
so we got to, you know, my Garmin watch is slowly ticking 0.1 mile after 0.1 mile because I'm only walking like 5 miles per hour. And I finally get to like the last, I'd say like 0.4, and I can kind of actually see my quote unquote virtual finish line. There's nobody there, but I know where I have to go.
All right.
And I just looked at everybody. I was like, you guys can go up ahead. Like I want to finish this running. Like I don't want to finish walking. So everybody ended up leaving me. I ended up having my phone just playing one of my favorite songs, playing some music. And I remember closing my eyes and just telling myself, Stephen, this is it. Give everything you have. You're about to be an Ironman. Just do it. So I closed my eyes and I started sprinting. Now, I tell you, I was sprinting. I really don't know how fast I was going, but I gave literally everything that I had and just fought through and ignored all the pain. I think the adrenaline took over.
Sure. And
there was no, like I said, there was no real finish line. Everybody to just make that epic decree that I was an Ironman. But when I made sure that my watch, when I saw 26.2 go on it, I went mm-hmm. an extra 0.1 miles just to make sure that I went the full distance. And
awesome.
I finally collapsed on the ground and just looked to the sky and I did it. You know, so it's kind of hard to even believe it sometimes, but yeah, I did it.
You did it. And so I'm curious, did your dad, did your wife, or did you claim, I am an Ironman, you are an Ironman? How did that go down?
Yeah, I had a couple of people saying that, like, they pretty much all supported me by saying that when I was done. But
oh, that's awesome.
It was just, honestly, it was a very strange cocktail of emotions when I was done with that race. It was really strange.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had people ask me, how did you feel after, 12 years after not racing again? Like, I love the term strange cocktail of emotions, because it's not real clear about how you would put it all together, right? Perhaps you need to be a poet to be able to really describe it. But I am sure there was a gamut of emotions that went through your mind, and the minds of the people that believed in you,
were cheering you on,
and so with that, so now you are an Ironman. So so I'm curious, is what happened after the race, and did you feel a sense of fulfillment?
Yeah, wow. I mean, there was nobody there. I didn't really self promote. I was going through some personal hardships, and so I didn't flaunt my accomplishment all over social media. I didn't tell a bunch of people about it. I really just wanted to do it for me and for the MS Fitness Challenge. Mm-hmm. And there was no medal. I ended up getting a medal, but it would take 2.5 months to finally ship to me. So it didn't happen, but my body was definitely telling me otherwise.
Exactly.
Because that night, the adrenaline was still coursing through me. I was actually able to walk after I was done with the race. But when I got into my wife's car, she drove us home. It was about a 10-minute ride. When we tried to get out of the car, I had to literally put almost all of my body weight onto my wife and drag my feet behind me. Mm-hmm. And I literally crawled up the steps.
I bet.
One by one.
And then, easier to crawl.
Yep, I literally crawled into our bathroom and lifted myself up over the tub. And my body was just, it didn't know what to do. I had a fever of 104.5. I was just shaking. I was freezing. I couldn't get warm. My wife had bought me a full plate of shrimp for me as a celebratory dinner. And I just, my appetite was just ruined because of all the garbage hot mess of energy gels and Gatorade I've been consuming all day. And mm-hmm. I just started, I'll admit this. I started weeping. I just started wailing. I didn't really know how to process the emotions that were going through my body. I didn't really know how to handle all of it. So.
Well, that's how you handled it. I would say that you handled it just what your body needed to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So what happened? So there was that day, and you're just spent. And as I explained to you earlier, it's just, endurance athletes call an event like this. And for me, as a former professional athlete, after stage racing for, 2 weeks and a month, back-to-back stage races in France, we'd come back to the States, and I would say just the term is just destroyed. Right. Our bodies were just destroyed. And when you're that tired, it's hard to physically, mentally, and emotionally really be able to function all that well. But it's stuff that we don't talk about much. So I hear you're in the tub weeping with joy and relief and all that was wrapped into this endeavor. But what happened the days that followed? Because as you don't need to be reminded, you're still destroyed. And for the listeners to understand, it takes months to recover from something like this.
Maureen, this, I would actually say I'm finally after, October 10th, we're almost 3 months to date, about 90 days later, I'm finally at the point where I can almost say I'm almost back to where I was before the Ironman. It's taken that long. Mm-hmm. And the first few days, there was no walking. I literally couldn't walk. It wasn't happening. And my body was just under, I don't know if I would really recommend any, if somebody listening, if you want to do an Ironman with MS, I'm 100% going to support you. 100%. Would I recommend it? I don't really know. It's an indescribable struggle afterwards to get through the pain and the hardship. And there's honestly, I almost fell into this episode of just I'd say depression afterwards. And it almost just felt I couldn't even justify why I went through all that pain. What was the point? because I had all these grandiose ideas of becoming this figurehead that really brought like this huge awareness to like the battle and the struggle that people with MS face, to raise awareness and support and to inspire hope for like thousands and maybe millions of people. And like, none of that happened. It was just, I did an Ironman, almost nobody knew about it. And it was just like, I had to pay the consequence. Like I had to pay the price of the pain. And that was really hard to wrestle with.
Right. And in the moment, because my reflection is it's an accomplishment that will go on forever. And I know you know this now, but when you're, I'm just going to keep using this term, destroyed, because it's COVID land too.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just everything is different. And you kind of moved into, you know, radio silence, you know, and social media. And you had to, you know, slay all the dragons on your own and go through, you know, this post endurance event, depression that a lot of people don't talk about because it's not like this hero, aspect of the journey, but it is, it really is, because it's part of it. And for you, you didn't have this endurance training going into it. And you were, you know, endurance athlete to the point of being a superstar athlete, but not these endurance events stuff. So, you know, you were just diving into uncharted territory at every step of the way. So, remind us how long you feel like it took you to recover from this.
Yeah, it's been 3 months now. And I would say this is the first week where I'm actually starting to feel back to my baseline. But yeah, 3 months is about accurate.
Right. So a lot of work went into it. And then you're just all the emotions that go into it, all the time and the thought around training, and then it's done.
Yeah.
And I think that's hard.
That was really hard. Cause that, I never realized how much of like a motivator, like knowing that date was coming, just having that as a goal was such a big like motivator for myself. And then just, you know, I was happy that I did it, but it was like you said, it was just boom, it's done. Like 15 hours, 35 minutes of effort, click, boom, over. Now what?
I guess. Now what? And I'm super tired. And I'm supposed to stay motivated.
Yeah,
that's hard. So thank you for sharing that aspect of the journey, because it's true. I mean, all of us with MS know what it feels like to overtrain. And this is a realm that people can't even begin to fathom. So you're in this territory that even people can't really understand, because it's so hard for us people, for us that work out with MS. And if we overdo it, we could be laid up for a day or a week.
Yeah.
And, you know, to do an Ironman, what it takes to recover from that is a depth of an awareness that a lot of people can't understand.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
to the degree I can, I give you tons of credit for it.
Yeah. I don't want to scare anybody, but I just want to like really project the gravity of what it costs my body to do something like this. But it was only about maybe a week after I did the Ironman, and before pre-Ironman, my resting heart rate was all the way down into like the low 40s. Like I would float around like 42 beats per minute.
Uh-huh.
After my Ironman, I couldn't get my resting heart rate below 70. So,
wow.
And the one night my wife, she actually woke up, and usually when she like moves me or pushes up against me, my body moves too. She woke up and found me not breathing and unresponsive.
What?
And she had to like shake me and scream at me to wake me up. So I've had a sleep study done. They couldn't find anything, but I know that like I was feeling just like my body was just not right. There was something going on. Like, I don't even know how to describe it, but it took so much out of me. And it's, that's why moving forward, there's I just have to really just consider all the risks and just like that. That's why I think it was so difficult to process, like, was this really all worth it?
Yeah. And I think the lesson, one of the many, many lessons from this is, yeah, you look at it, was this all worth it? But look at what you learned.
Oh yeah.
And what you have to share. Like I shared with you, like I was so torn to contact you before the race and talk about what happens afterwards.
Yeah.
And, sometimes I feel like the wisdom keeper, but I don't want to be Miss Know-It-All. So, you know, this now, and the way that you could coach people in the future about, you know, how to train appropriately and how to prepare yourself for recovery, is huge to better set people up for success.
Yeah.
And, you had to be a trailblazer, and I know you well enough to know that you would be more than willing to share the wisdom of and then afterwards, because there's the beginning, there's what you need to train for, and then there's the race itself. And then there's what you do after the race. And sometimes that post-race stuff isn't addressed enough.
Yeah.
And so there's a big learning for you there, and you will carry it on with your own endeavors as well as the endeavors of other people that you work with, I am certain. So Mike, the next question that obviously is that follows all this is, what are your plans now? And what does the future hold for your stubborn visual self about what are you going to pull to you next?
Yeah. So I know myself, Maureen. And like we talked about, like having that sort of mountaintop to climb is really healthy for me. And I know that I said that I will never, ever, 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 ever do this again, but I don't know. I was in the moment, because as of late, like the race registration that I purchased for 2020 transferred to 2021. So I'm actually still registered for the 2021 full distance Maryland Ironman September 19th of this year, 2021. So I am 100% committed to actually doing that Ironman. But beyond that, even I've got my sights actually set on making it to the World Championships to Kona one day. If that takes me 12 years of doing an Ironman every year until I finally make it to where I finally get to tell my story on a national stage, then so be it. But one of the other crazy things, that this will actually be the first time I actually go like very public with this endeavor, and it's one that's probably the craziest thing I'll ever seek out to do in my life. And you might be asking, like, what's crazier than an Ironman with that mess? But my swim coach, Louise, she's actually has swum the English Channel twice. And there has been, I looked it up, there's been nobody ever with MS who has actually successfully swam the English Channel. There was one person who tried who ended up coming short. So one of the cool things, that what's so amazing is that like 15 months ago, I didn't really know how to swim. And just yesterday I did a 3-mile swim just because I could. Yeah. The only reason I stopped is because I ran out of time. I have other obligations, but because my arms haven't really been that affected by MS, I'm a really strong swimmer. Like I don't really have to move my legs to swim. So I just had this crazy, she talked about her experience and I looked at her and I said, you know, I think that's something I want to do. So there's a lot that goes into actually swimming the English Channel. It's a 21-mile swim that less people that have climbed Mount Everest have actually completed this swim. I think it's around like 1300 people ever. But it takes, like, you have to prepare your spot a year in advance. I think the total fees add up to well over $10,000. And it's just, there's so much that goes into it. But it is something I have my sights set on for the next like 3 to 4 years as a goal. And this is like, I guess, my initiating commitment to just let everybody know listening that it is something I very much so plan and believe that I will accomplish.
Wow. Well, you heard it first here, people.
You sure did.
Wow, Stephen. You know, I'm the kind of person that keep things close to the vest for quite a while, like before, you know, maybe at the start line, I'm like, I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
But you are so, so inspiring and, you know, this is your way.
That's
you
right.
know, like, I just imagine you have, like, you just lasso a dream, this big bodacious dream, and you just pull it to you, and you find a way, you adapt, and along the way, when you're pulling this thing to you, you find your guides, you find the support, and you go through everything that you need to go through in order to get there.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that with us. And man, this whole journey of yours, and I love, like, no way we'll ever do this again. And then, you know, you signed up for next year's Ironman and talking about the world championships. And it's just incredible. So, you know, one of the final questions that I have for you is, what would your advice be to anyone with MS or not with MS and facing a physical challenge that is thinking about doing something as crazy as an Ironman? What sort of advice would you give them?
Yeah. Well, first off, I realize that everybody that has MS or whatever difficulties you might have, doing an Ironman just might legitimately not be like a realistic ambition. Like, we're all at different places with our MS, and I don't want to discourage anybody that just because you might not be able to do an Ironman, that makes you any less of like of an inspiration or any less capable of greatness than anything myself or anybody else. Like, I want to just lay that out there first. But I think my advice to anybody looking to do whatever's crazy for you, like whatever that goal might be, it could be an Ironman, it could be a 5K, it could be walking 100 yards, whatever that is for you, don't let that become the defining value of like who you are as a person. Don't invest your emotional capital and your value as a human being into that accomplishment. Because I came very, very close and dangerously flirted with that, with this Ironman. And I think the biggest lesson that I learned is that we need to make our goals and our dreams just mere stepping stones to the better future and the person that we want to become. There is no finish line. Like, that's what we have to keep in our minds. There is no finish line. Like, I could do 100 Ironmans and never be done. Like, you constantly have to have something that you're striving for. You can't leave yourself out with no hope in the darkness, with nothing left to conquer. Always leave yourself with the next stepping stone and just continue to strive for just, there was, I'm not sure if you saw, but there was this recent man with Down syndrome who became the first person ever with Down syndrome to finish an Ironman. So inspirational. I'm just so
inspirational. Yes.
So motivated by him. But him and his dad started an organization that talks about being 1% better, like every day be 1% better. So with MS, one day you might be at a baseline and you get taken back down to 50%. Mm-hmm. Will you ever make it back to that, let's say that 100% baseline? Maybe, maybe not. But the one thing you can do is you can get 1% better. Mm-hmm. That may or may not be a physical 1%. Maybe it's mental. Maybe it's your attitude. Maybe it's your spirit. Maybe it's with your diet. Whatever it is, we can improve our lives 1% at a time, 24 hours at a time. Focus on today. Focus on those small incremental changes and let your goals and dreams be just stepping stones to something greater.
Oh, Stephen, that is so beautiful and awesome. And personally, if I wished for anything for you out of this, is to have gained that wisdom, because that is wisdom. We are that which accomplishes things, that do things. We're not the thing.
Right.
And you know, I'm like you, stubborn and determined and want to go after things, but it's tricky when you get yourself caught up that's your identity. And no, it's something that you do, and that is your spirit, which will always be indomitable, regardless of whatever happens. And with MS, with life, with aging, and all that kind of stuff, is that you're a go-getter, and you, like when you said, I know myself well enough. And that's beautiful, because you know what drives you, and when something is driving you that doesn't serve you, it's gonna show up. And it's not going to be fun,
right?
Because it's a lesson you get to learn. And so you gain incredible wisdom. You learn so much about yourself through this endeavor. And, you know, swimming the English Channel is a little better than 1% better, well, but that's you.
It's going to take 1% at a time to reach that goal, though. It's not going to happen overnight.
Yeah. And I think that's another really important thing too, is is to look at really the journey of when we put out a big dream for ourselves, to realize that it doesn't happen overnight, and that we are going to run into obstacles, and it's going to take time, and there's going to be learning along the way.
Yeah.
And if you're willing to do that and you can stay in the game, you're going to be successful. You're going to be successful. And, you know, not so attached to, you know, I have to do this in under 10 hours or something silly like that. You know,
right.
It's like, you got it done and you're moving on. So it's fantastic. Well, Stephen, this has been so much fun. And I was really looking forward to interviewing you, because as you create the platform and the place for people to share, people with MS to share their inspirational journeys, to encourage and empower people to do it, you're certainly one of those people that should share your story. So thank you for this opportunity to interview you, and for you to be so raw and authentic, to really educate people in how to pursue their dreams, and just what kind of dreams they should be pursuing or can pursue. It really is a pleasure for me, and thank you so much. And with that, is there anything else that you want to let your listeners know about this endeavor, or anything else?
No, I just want to thank you, Mo, for taking the time to do this interview. It's been, as you sort of mentioned, like the journey, I think the value of that far outweighs the value of that, I'd almost say, silly little medal that they sent me. Like, just the people involved with that, the support that I've had, all the encouragement, like those are the things that I'll treasure in store for the rest of my life. And none of this would have been possible without those people, without my wife, without my coaches, without the support of David Lyons and Kendra, and for them building this MS Fitness Challenge charity, and just for all the amazing people we have that are part of our group, that every day together as just a unified team, we get to share and embrace in the hope and the victory that we can find in this disease. So I want to thank all my listeners for tuning in, for sticking this one out. I know it's a little longer than usual, but I hope that they've gleaned something useful and encouraging that they can take into their own lives and start to forge a path of hope and victory for themselves.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I know I have, and I'm just really touched by your lessons, your journey. And I absolutely think you are a rock star, and thank you so much for sharing this journey. And I'm going to now turn it back over to you. Thank you for this opportunity, and I'll let you sign out.
All right. Sounds good. That's going to wrap it up for this episode. Thank you for listening, and be sure to stay tuned for future episodes. Remember, new and previous episodes of the MS Fitness Challenge podcast are available for download on Apple, Google, Spotify, and Simplecast. A great way you can help and support the MS Fitness Challenge is by sharing, rating, and reviewing this podcast. So if you haven't taken the time to do it yet, leave us a 5-star review and share how this podcast has made a difference in your life. Remember, the more people we can reach, the greater the impact we can have. Also, be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn, and get plugged into the MS Fitness Challenge Gym Facebook group. The group is as active as ever and will give you the chance to get integrated to a motivated cast of dedicated MS warriors. To all those listening, to all our MS warriors, thank you. Don't give up the fight. Keep pressing, keep striving, and conquer MS.